This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. Okay, guys, I am probably one of the most accident-prone people on the planet. You can blame it on many things, bad luck, poor spatial perception, but it all results in the same thing. Bree can injure herself literally anywhere, anytime. Take, for instance, last week, I was plucking my eyebrows, people, and I stabbed myself in the hand. Next thing I know, I am bleeding everywhere going, what the heck just happened? But luckily for me, I had some Active Skin Repair on hand, just one spray, and it felt so much better. By the next day, it was not red, not sore. It was fantastic. I love this stuff. Active Skin Repair can be used to treat a wide range of skin issues, and since it's all natural, non-toxic, it's perfect for people like me with sensitive skin. It works by utilizing hydrochloric acid, which mimics a natural immune response to cleanse, soothe irritation, reduce inflammation, and support the healing. With over 500,000 happy customers, thousands of five-star reviews, and ingredients that are so safe and clean that it can be used from the youngest member of your family all the way up to the oldest, most accident prone like me, you can have one simple solution for your family's skin health needs. So visit www.activeskincarerepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order by using the code NOGUILT. That's www.activeskinrepair.com. Use the code NOGUILT to get 20% off your order.
Weaponized responsibility is, let's say my wife is working with our toddler and all of a sudden there's spilled milk everywhere and our toddler is about to just make a 2x mess into 20x. And she's like, Zach, I really need your help right now. I say, hey, I'm doing the taxes. Like, I can't help you right now. I'm doing the thing that's on my responsibilities list. And so I'm weaponizing the level of priority that I'm putting my own responsibility over a shared domestic responsibility between the two of us.
Welcome to the No Guilt Mom podcast. I am your host, Joanne Crone, here with the lovely Brie Tucker.
Why, hello, hello, everybody. How are you?
We have such a great episode for you today. It is with Zach Watson. You might know him from Instagram or TikTok because he is there as Real Zach Think Share. And it is where he shares mental load advice for the dudes and to help guys recognize the mental load that they're putting on their wives. And it's just such refreshing stuff to see.
Yes. I mean, I have told him, like, both when we were doing the interview and off mic, that I really love that he is using his platform for good. He's using his gift for good and not for evil.
For good and not for evil.
With great skill comes, or not skill, what is it? Talent, whatever it was from Spider-Man,
with
comes great
talent
responsibility.
Comes great responsibility, yeah.
Yes.
He does not go to the Joe Rogan side of the sphere. In fact, it's totally opposite of that, which we're thankful for.
And we appreciate that.
So Zach Watson is a recovering man child. He calls himself that. I love it. An invisible labor educator for men. He helps men better understand the invisible labor going on in their homes and redistributing the domestic workload. You can find him on Instagram at RealZachThinkShare. And Zach is the proud dad to a 2.5-year-old. And we hope you enjoy our interview like we did with Zach.
You want mom life to be easier. That's our goal too. Our mission is to raise more self-sufficient and independent kids, and we're going to have fun doing it. We're going to help you delegate and step back. Each episode, we'll tackle strategies for positive discipline, making our kids more responsible, and making our lives better in the process. Welcome to the No Guilt Mom Podcast.
Welcome, Zach, to the podcast. Okay, so the first thing I have to mention to you, though, is like we were talking on Instagram before you came on the podcast, and you mentioned to me that you were going to put MED on your bio. And I see MED is now on your bio as Zach Watson MED for the podcast. So you added it.
I thought I didn't, but because it...
No, you did. It's there.
Oh, okay, cool. On Instagram, it won't let me. It's like stuck. I keep trying to edit it. But yeah, thank you for... giving me permission, honestly, by doing it yourself.
Yeah. Well, okay. So like, I'm interested because there was a specific reason I didn't add my MED at first. Like, what was your thinking on it?
I think for a while it was, so it's a master's in education for mathematical curriculum and development. And I was a math teacher for 8 years in Massachusetts. And I think I still feel weird calling a lot of people call me an expert. So I'll jump on their bandwagon of calling myself an expert, just talking about mental load. And that's not what my master's it is in. But I do think, you know, I recognize as a coach for men is that I'm doing education, I'm doing curriculum development. So I think that was when I saw you had it, and I saw that you weren't talking about specific like educational stuff that you would see of like a teacher. I was like, okay, yeah, actually part of the reason I think I am good at talking about mental load is I treat it like practice problems in math. Is you have to see like 1,000 y equals mx plus b type equations to get it right. And I personally have probably done about 20,000 of them. And so I think my understanding of how to do that has actually really translated over to the way that I speak about mental load.
Yeah, that's interesting because originally, like, I didn't add MED to any of my stuff until a coach told me to do it, who didn't realize that I was actually qualified and had a master's degree. I was hiding it for such a long time because those education degrees, you tend to like knock down a little bit. Like, I knocked it down because that's what I feel like the world tells you, especially here in Arizona. Teachers are not valued at all.
Like, right?
You're basically told, like, you do not know what you're doing. You are a teacher. And so that was off of my bio for a really long time. And it's interesting because the first thing you said when we started this interview was this difference between this expert level and particularly how, like, you see a lot of female experts talking about mental load. Mm-hmm. We talk about mental load a lot. And then you talk about mental load as a man and you get a lot more attention coming at you for it. Mm-hmm. And you must feel that attention coming at you. What do you see really as the difference for that attention? How do you rationalize it?
You guys probably know Paige. She's a page turner.
Yes, we talk online as well.
We live in the same state. And I think it was one of her earlier videos I had stitched. And I realized how much we talk a lot about, like, just giving examples of mental load and domestic labor. And at one point, I was commenting on some really minor backlash. I was like, I think I was almost annoyed. I was like, I want someone to push back, like someone like hit me or something. Because I was just getting a lot of moms in there that are just like, yeah, this is so great. Glad to hear it. So great coming from a man. And then she tagged me in a video. She's like, here, you can have them. And she showed me a stitch of someone that did her video. And then they shot to Matthew McConaughey from Wolf of Wall Street. It's fairy dust. Those are the comments, those are the DMs that she gets, where it's like a bunch of men pissed that she's trying to bring this issue up. Meanwhile, I get all the women that feel heard and validated by what I'm saying about it. I think one of the things I've tried to do is be palatable for men and try to do some of the emotional labor of putting myself in a vulnerable place, sharing where I'm screwing up and where I'm adding mental load for my partner first. And I think that gives a lot of the guys an opportunity to be like, oh yeah, he sucks. And then they hear themselves in it and they're like, okay, all right, maybe that's me too. Versus if I think earlier in my content creation, I was saying things where I felt better than a lot of guys. I was like, here's where you're screwing up and here's where I'm better. And that probably was pushing away guys and they probably couldn't hear it. And so I've adjusted my tone, one, because I recognize I want to work with guys and help them out and help them recover from man-childness like I'm working on.
I love that. Use that term. It cracks us up. It's in your title underneath your name right now.
Yeah.
Zach Watson, recovering man-child. That is what we're seeing as we're interviewing you. I love it.
To go along with that, I mean, I can see that as a woman, when a man tries to tell me advice about anything I am doing wrong, I'm like, no, do you even know? And I would probably fight pretty hard against it. But I don't think I would go publicly fighting as, I don't know. It's a really hard thing. Do you get any of the men who come against you quite as hard as Paige gets?
A couple of them, but I seem to have an army of women to back me up and they just eat them alive before I even get to the comment section. There's probably already 20 responses.
You've got your own Swifties. I would agree with that. It is frustrating as a woman sometimes, like, how much we have to work to get acknowledged and noticed. And like we talked about that earlier, how you had a comparison before with work of somebody that we've had on the podcast a few times. We love Eve Rotsky and her work, and she's had to work hard to get to where she is. But I love how you were using the platform that you were given for whatever the reason, societal expectations, because you're a man, it doesn't matter. You were using that platform to put forth positive change for everybody. And that is why we love you. That is why the women love you, because you're saying, you know what? No, we all need to work on this. Let's move forward with it. And that is what is phenomenal. And you don't see that as much, because it feels like, in general, it's really easy to be like, oh, she's a girl, she messed up there. But it's not as easy in society for them to be like, oh, he's a man, he messed up there. It's all like, whoa, 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 wait, let's just hear him out. Let's hear him out and see the patriarchy of that. I love how you're working and figuring out how to communicate this in a way that is going to make positive change for everybody. And thank you for being a recovering man child. Love it, Zach. Love it.
And I want to dig into that recovering man childness too. And may I just add that not only do you teach about mental load, but I also learned this morning from watching your reels how to restring a hoodie that I was like, that looks so easy. I have so much trouble with that one.
It's just a tool. It's a single tool.
I need to get it because honestly, I'm like the string comes out of a hoodie and I'm like, forget it. It's not worth it anymore.
It's gone. It's gone too far. Let it go.
We're going to get into that recovering man child right after this break.
Hey, all. It is Joanne.
And Bree here.
And we want to tell you about a podcast that you should check out. It's called Understood Explained. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Uturbe, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
And in this latest season of Understood Explained, it covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. We actually just listened to the episode, IEPs, Does My Child Need an IEP? And here is what we loved about it.
I loved that it was so digestible. Like, it was such a short episode. And all of the topics, which could be really confusing to parents, were easily explained.
And I loved how they gave great concrete examples, because you know how much I love me a good example. They explained what kind of services and supports you could actually see on a child's IEP or individual education plan. And they explained those acronyms. That nothing drives me more crazy than when there's acronyms and I don't get it. I don't know what it stands for. They took the time to explain everything in so much detail and to cover concerns that a lot of families have about special ed services.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains, or just click on the link in our show notes.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
So, Zach, I'm really interested in your backstory. Like, when was this recovering man-child kind of awakening? When did you go from being man-child to recovering?
Clearest point was probably 2022. We had about just under a one-year-old. And I'd been talking with Laura Danger and Abby Eckel on TikTok. And at one point, I had just made a video saying, like, what book should I read next? I was working on Ruth Bader Ginsburg's memoir, and both of them had recommended I listen to Fair Play. And I thought to myself, one, oh, this will be good. This will be appropriate. I feel like I'm constantly listening to books that can continue my education so I can speak in a more useful way. I had been really stagnant in my growth on TikTok a couple of months prior. Roe v. Wade was overturned. Because I didn't feel like I ought to have a voice. And honestly, I just green screened people that were talking about it. And I felt weird being a man talking about like a woman's issue. As I was listening to the book, I think I had this understanding that I thought I was better than most men, honestly. I think my first videos that people came to know me for was I was talking about being on paternity leave for 4 months and how the first two videos that really did well were me talking about the sixth S that we don't talk about, which is smell, and how I would use mom's shirt over my shoulder to help calm her newborn down. And then the second one, she was really committed to breastfeeding. And in that time, I had like a 10-minute goal of calming her child down. If she wouldn't calm down in 10 minutes, I couldn't soothe her. We had agreed that I would have to go wake up my wife. Even if she had just been sleeping for 45 minutes, that was the expectation we created. So because of that, I felt like I was ahead of a lot of guys, because a lot of people were saying how crazy it was that I was on paternity leave for 4 months. And then once I read Fair Play, I realized how much was missing from my understanding. Like, I still think I was a good dad, but I don't know if I was the partner that I thought I was. If you were to imagine a pie chart of the domestic labor that exists in the home, let's say it's including mental load, is I thought I had a good chunk higher. And if you zoom out, I was probably at 10%. And a lot of the other guys that I was comparing myself to were at 5%. So I was double them, but still at 10%. So yeah. I think once I started to understand mental load that and like the emotional labor that is done and is required for a home to work, that was the big aha, I think.
That's really interesting. I'm curious even more. What was it like for you growing up? What did you see your parents? How was it in your home? And what did you witness there in terms of mental load?
I think my mom still manages a bit more of the mental load. There are even moments now where I call my dad out sometimes. There have been multiple times in the past year where my dad's asking my mom a question. Remember, we're at my cousin's wedding and he called up from like the little beach to where to put the chairs. I said, "Dad, she's in the shower. Why don't you make an executive decision on this one?" And he was like, no, she has like this like specific way she wants it. I was like, "Dad, I feel like you got this one. I'm not going to bother her." So I think there's still a lot of the mental load isn't necessarily fully equitable in my parents' house. I think my mom she calls herself a humanist, but I definitely think she's a feminist. A huge part of what I grew up in was she was actually the main breadwinner. She had one job for 36 years as a teacher. My dad had a lot of different jobs and never really gained enough steam to beat her income. So her doing that job was typically more important than him doing his job. And they both have master's degrees. So I think just seeing her have a little bit more of the financial power in our home, I couldn't tell you how that's impacted the way that I think about things, but I anticipate like all those guys out there you see on those like toxic podcasts, like I can't date a woman that earns more than me. Like you would never catch me saying something like that.
I think like in our society, there's the kind of roles that we fall into where like the man makes the money decisions and the woman makes like the home decisions, just like you saw with your dad deferring to the home, like decor to your mom. But you saw that, you didn't see that in your home. You saw your mom make the finance decisions, and it wasn't these strict roles that I think so many other people have. My question is like, what do you see among other men now, like your friends, or how they're managing the mental load in their homes? Like, do they see what you're doing, or is it still a very much a hands-off situation? I ask because me, like knowing parenting and knowing everything, like I have no effect on my friends outside of Brie, who works with me, because you're known for this great thing of encouraging the mental load in others. And so other people feel threatened. And so I guess I'm asking, like, do any of your male friends feel threatened?
I don't know, honestly. Yeah. And the reason I'll say I don't know is because I don't talk to them that I don't talk to when you say my friends, I'm thinking of like my college friends that I saw as my main friend group that slowly we talk less and less every year of the, 10 years now we've been out of college. So I don't talk to them that much about it. I honestly don't even know if they watch my stuff. I think I get excited for sure, like sharing. I think they've always known that I wanted to become a content creator full time. I've been making videos since 2016. And I think to see me go full time this year, it's probably cool for a couple of them. But coming back to the question, I think one thing I do see with my newer friends from different groups I've hung out with, like outside of college, I don't know the difference in the mental load. I do recognize the difference in the emotional labor that I see. So I think that, like, my cousin is coming to stay with us for a couple of days. And I know with him and a lot of the guys that I spend time with nowadays, like, you'll see us like hug for 20 seconds. You'll see us like stand close to each other and just be with each other and not feel like we need to go play cornhole out back to like kill the awkward silence or something. I think in a lot of ways of my friendships used to be much more around games and sports and drinking. And I think a lot of that's evolved over the years. I have a friend that right now he's going through a divorce and I talk with him every day. We help each other stay accountable for getting work done in our businesses. And we met in person one day to work alongside each other. And I remember like holding him. And I think that was the like positive, like non-toxic masculinity that I think I experienced with my more recent guy friends has been palpably different than what I had in college.
There's a lot of vulnerability. It's a generational thing, I think. Yeah, because I'm right on the cusp of Gen X and millennial and Bree's firmly in Gen X. And it's like, well, firmly by being like two years older than me. No, they are really not that much.
But I was also the youngest in my family and you were the oldest.
Yeah.
So that makes a big difference. But anyway, yeah, I'm firmly like those feet are planted in cement. They're not moving.
But it's cool to see that the values are changing and that the toxic masculinity in some areas are definitely like shedding away a little bit. I know a question that a lot of people would want to know is if our listeners right now, if they have a partner who is not stepping up, who does not realize the mental load, what are your recommendations? What can they do about it?
So my biggest recommendation, which I don't typically make in short form content anymore because this will require more emotional labor of women. And like when you try to make a 90-second clip, giving them how to put their emotional labor efforts out, it just doesn't go well for anyone. I think the best answer that I've come to in the past year, and I can say similar to like, I know I did a bad job answering your previous question about like, where's the mental load that I'm seeing with my friends and family.
I think you did a fantastic job, Zach.
Oh, thank you. So in the past 2 years, I was in sales. And one of the things, as I was talking more about these subjects the past 2 years, I started seeing my colleagues and my managers starting to use the word mental load. I forget, I'd sent an email over. I said, hey, can you do something for me? And he responded back, oh yeah, here's the thing. Did I take the mental load off you? And then like, PS, did I do it right? And so slowly from me, just including those words that are kind of uncomfortable because it's new vocabulary and it feels like you're forwarding like an agenda or something, but using this new vocabulary, I noticed it starting to shift and change how my colleagues and my peers would think and talk. And similarly, like I made a post on LinkedIn the other day about my friend, like he used it in a really normalized way in a text to me. He's like, hey, I got the mental load on this one. And that I think is honestly how women can be fusing that into the home. And if they're doing the emotional labor of contextualizing it for how the guys are doing the mental load in their lives. So for example, let's say you're married to a man that is a manager, manages a couple people, and he comes home, complains about this one person that he manages that always is late on their time card. You say, hey, sounds like you have to do a lot of mental load for managing and making sure they get his time card on time. Otherwise, it sits on you all weekend that you have to send him the email on Monday to remind him. And then he starts recognizing, oh, okay, when something's sitting on my head as like a to-do list that I'm not going to write down, it's not going to go on a sticky note, but it's going to stay in my brain for 3 days. That's what mental load is. And when they can see how they're experiencing it in their own roles in their job. Same with emotional labor. I think if you can start infusing that, like, yeah, I hate it. Every time my boss comes into this meeting, like, we got to stroke his ego and like, we got to be really careful about how direct we are with him. Wow. It sounds like you do a lot of emotional labor to make sure you don't piss off your boss. I think that's a really effective way, is starting to infuse and label the language of like how they're already doing those things.
Oh my gosh, I love this so much, because I think of like conversations with my husband lately, and he's doing that with his bosses. And he's great with, he knows emotional labor and mental load anyways, but it is such a common thing that happens in workplaces. And you're doing such a teacher thing too, by the way, by labeling it and putting the vocabulary with it. And with the vocabulary comes the power to change the situation. And I love it all. I think it's genius. I think it's wonderful.
Thank you.
Also, building off of the work that's already out there and crediting it as well is a real awesome thing to see.
I think the only original thing that I've done, which apparently I was told that I coined it recently, was weaponized responsibility.
Ooh, weaponized responsibility sounds really interesting. Let's hear more about that right after the break.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
So you were talking about weaponized responsibility, and we know about weaponized incompetence. So what is the responsibility component?
So, I mean, I made this up that there may be a previously existing word or phrase that I'm not crediting, but I came up with this term based on recognizing what weaponized incompetence is, which I would defer to Laura Danger. I feel like she's like the expert on it from all the videos she does, but I would want to ask her whether that is purposeful or not. If a guy sucks at something, but isn't necessarily doing it on purpose, he's just like, get more like learned helplessness almost. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's weaponized, mm-hmm. but coming back to your question, I think weaponized responsibility is, I made an example the other day. Let's say Alyssa, my wife, is working with our toddler, and all of a sudden there's spilled milk everywhere, and our toddler is about to just make a 2x mess into 20x. And she's like, Zach, I really need your help right now. I say, hey, I'm doing the taxes. Like, I can't help you right now. Like, I'm mm-hmm. doing the thing that's on my responsibilities list. And so I'm weaponizing the level of priority that I'm putting my own responsibility over a shared domestic responsibility between the two of us.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's like making the task that you're doing more important than the task that needs immediate assistance.
Or the task that like you just said, like it's a group. Like it, your task just doing for you versus a task that would be helping everybody there.
And I think I came up with this maybe 6 months ago. I made the first video of it 3 months later because it came up finally in one of the groups that I was running with the guys that I coach. Mm-hmm. But I recognized where I was doing this was all the time. So I own dishes in our house. I filled the dishwasher, empty it, clean pots and pans, etc. Alyssa leaves the food out and she knows it's going to get taken care of and won't go bad overnight. In the mornings when we'd have to feed our dog, two cats, three goats.
Got a little farm going on there.
Those are all like shared household responsibilities. For a while, our minimum standard of care around the morning routine was whoever wakes up first does all three of those things. And I kept finding myself saying like, all right, I got to do the dishes at this point. And then I would do those first before the other three. And let's say Alyssa wakes up 15 minutes after I did, I'm doing the dishes as she comes down and she says, did you do the dogs or the cats or the goats? So like, no, I've been working on the dishes. So I think it was, I was starting to see the eroding of trust that it had on my wife as she would come in the morning and wonder why are the morning routine things not done. And it was because I was checking off my own to-do list first.
That, like what you say there, not many partners pick up on at all. And I just like want to get to the bottom of like, what makes you realize these things? Like, how did you realize that there was an eroding of trust versus like, I mean, I hear partners attribute it to, oh, my wife's just being cranky in the morning, or my wife's just doing this, putting it on the woman. And you immediately are like, oh, it is something that I am doing, and you're introspective about it.
Yeah. I think the important part is I'm curious from either side, being able to pick up on that, that again, this isn't just the person being grumpy. This isn't just attributing to maybe I'm being selfish by doing something, but picking up on the fact that it's an erosion of trust. Like, that was interesting. Did she articulate that? Did you guys sit down and have a conversation, or did you just be like, oh, yeah, she's trusting me to help do stuff and I'm not doing it? Still, I don't even think I can make that leap. I don't. I think I'd be like, yeah, Miguel's a little cranky today. It's okay. I'm going to give some extra love.
I think it's usually when it happens like multiple days in a row, or like three or four times over a set of 2 weeks. And I think like when you hear that tone of again, it's like that repetitive annoyance over like the single one-off annoyance has a different like flavor to it. And I think I've started picking up on some of that. I mean, my wife and I were separated in 2018 because I didn't have the language for it. I put too much mental load on her. We had bought a multifamily house and I was very invested in my YouTube career, which ironically is my smallest platform right now. And like, I was putting in probably an hour or two a day on YouTube, and this house that we agreed to renovate, like I was twiddling my thumbs about trying to figure out how to get an electrician in the house, and we're new homeowners. I think the amount of erosion that happened in that time and that it took to build that trust back after we got back together, I think I'm both lucky that I got to go through a separation and not a divorce and like experience the challenges of that to really have the opportunity to analyze all the problems that I created in that time. And so I could hopefully not repeat some of the same mistakes. I think the other part of the question is, I think because I certainly get an ego boost when I've articulated things well and people are like, yes, this is great. Everyone should talk about this. I have a craving now, I think, to consistently get better at analyzing myself and sharing it with the internet, because
it's what I do. I'm sorry. It's what I do with my writing as well. I'm like, ooh, this is a problem right here that I acted in a way that wasn't great. Oh, I could write about this. Let me write about it. So I totally get that.
I agree. Like, I think there's this part about being able to have a positive impact on others. I think that you're cutting yourself short, say, a stroke of ego on there. Like, it
makes you more introspective, though. You realize, like, the challenges can be turned into opportunities and they can be turned into teaching moments. Again, it's like the teacher thing. Like, it's a teaching moment and you can share this with the world.
Maybe that's what it is.
Well, Zach, you're writing a book. Tell us about the book you're writing.
It's slow going, but that part of the reason I started really diving into calling myself the recovering man child is I thought that's really great clickbait for a book title. So,
oh, it totally is.
That'll be included somewhere in there. But I recognize that. So, with the guys that I work with currently, working with about 33 of them in small groups, and we read through Fair Play. We have a discussion on that every week, and I'm holding them accountable to the weekly meetings with their partners. And I had to create a set of reflection questions for us to talk about every week as we go through each chapter. The reason I'm writing the book is I think there's a love Eve and there's a lack of palatability that I think a lot of guys have when they pick that book up. I think it was easy for me because I already had a woman audience, because I'd already read 50,000 comments by the time I picked that book up to know what women are going through. and that I was much more willing to empathize with their experience. And then I see countless stories of like guys being like, I won't pick that book up, but that's a misandrist book. I'm like, yeah, it's hard hitting, but it's not accurate. So I think a huge part of what I think I've been able to do is put myself first, be vulnerable, have almost like a Trojan horse type effect on defensive men that are struggling with these concepts.
That's the cover of your book right there. That's the cover. It's a Trojan horse on the cover, man. Sorry.
So the original idea of the book was called Confessions of a Recovering Manchild. I don't know if it'll end up being that cover name, because what it's meant to be is a directive way to see the mental load, see the emotional labor, and cite all the sources that I've already done and regurgitate it in a way that is going to be a little bit easier for guys to digest, as they want to see a guy that's f***ing up first so that they can see it in themselves.
Yeah.
So if I were to take Fairplay and Justin Baldoni's Man Enough and create some sort of love child, that is what I'm imagining my book would be.
Well, that's awesome. I look forward to reading it. I will definitely read it.
And you're going to have to come back and share more once you have that finished, because I have a feeling that'd be very popular with our audience. What do you think, Joanne?
I think so. And Zach, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So we have such the honor on this podcast to interview people who are really smart, who are really accomplished and talented. But we also get people who are just really damn good people. Zach was a really good person.
He really was.
I mean, we stayed on for half an hour with him afterwards, just chatting and coming up with ideas and talking business and talking like everything.
What I love is like talking about ways that we can bring our audience in with his audience and bring in the dudes with the women and getting us all together and all talking and making real change. Yep. Moving forward, not only in the way that we communicate, but in our expectations. And then we just continue to build upon that. And then that gets passed down to our kids. And then that gets passed down to their kids. And like, we are going to multiply with this mental load, equal distribution thought process.
Well, it really needs to be done by both sexes in the relationship, mm-hmm. like in heterosexual relationships. It can't just be the job of the woman to figure out how to take off this mental load and take off this emotional labor, because something I know I've been made aware of very recently is that we as women are kept so busy by all of our mom guilt that keeps us working like tirelessly, taking care of all of our kids' needs, getting in everywhere we can. Professionally, we're busy trying to be like the best partners. We're busy. We're just so busy, busy, busy that it leaves us exhausted and unable to actually make change anywhere. And something in the interview that Zach said was there is this emotional labor that's on us as well. And it comes to the point where it just becomes too much to do alone. And so when we could have men coming in and taking their fair share of things and educating other men about the mental load and having that change as well, then change just becomes so much more attainable. Because sometimes you look at the situation and you see some of the examples of guys in the world, especially on Fox News, and you're like, there's no hope. There's really no hope.
There's no hope for the future. There's no hope. We're screwed.
We're screwed. But there is a lot of like real good and people who actually see what's going on. And I truly believe that like women are such a powerful force. And the more we alleviate from our shoulders, the more we lift up off of our shoulders, the more energy we get back to then really make the changes. Because, you know, we were just talking this morning, Bree, when we were recording a podcast about how women are attuned to their kids crying, like, you know, mm-hmm. their newborns crying. It's like a biological thing in that respect. Whereas some of like our makeup, like we're attuned to different things than men. And so we need to be truly involved in our decisions and changes as well.
Yep, 100%. So I really hope everybody enjoyed this episode as much as we did. We really did. And we've got a link in the show notes if you want to learn some more about Zach, follow some more of his material. There's a link down there for you to get on his email list, learn a little bit more about what he's got going on. Definitely check him out on Instagram and TikTok. He's got some great information. It's fantastic. And more than likely, you're going to see him again in our No Guilt Mom universe.
Until next time, remember, the best mom's a happy mom. Take care of you. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks for stopping by.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.